We're up to Perek Yudal of Masilas Yesharim, Bechelkei HaPrishus, the different divisions of Prishus. And the Ramchal says, Chelkei HaPrishus HaRashiim Shlosha. There are three main divisions of Prishus. Kihine. Yesh Prishus Bahana'os, Prishus Badinim, and Prishus B'minhagim. There's Prishus when it comes to enjoying the world, there's precious when it comes to halacha, and there's precious when it comes to minig. He begins with precious bahanos, humashi hiskarnu perka koydim. Precious from pleasure is really what we talked about in the previous chapter. In Perikud Gimel, the Ramchal gave us a klal amiti, a true rule, that if you don't need it in this world, if it's not a necessity, it's proper, it's fitting to be poirish. Anything that you require, anything that's a necessity, so then you should not be perish. If you perish, you're a chayte. He was discussing indulgences, things that we enjoy. So that was the previous chapter, the Hainu. Sholokachas midivya oilo, elama shatsoich achriach. Only take from this world what necessity requires. V'davizayakif al komashuhu tainug le'echon nechushim. And this really encompasses anything that appeals to any of your senses. V'hayna b'ma'acholos, b'be'ilos, b'ma'bushim, b'tiyulim, b'shmuos, kol dovek yotze b'zeh, rak, b'yom sh'onig b'hem mitzvah. So there are pleasures in things we eat, and what we wear, and going for strolls, things we listen to, conversation or music perhaps, anything like that. So there's a world of precious, with the exception of the days when oynig is a mitzvah. There are some days when it's actually a mitzvah to have oynig. So we're not going to tell someone, yeah, it's a good idea to be a porush on Shabbos, on Yontif, maybe even Chol HaMoed. There are times when you're supposed to have oynig Shabbos. You're supposed to enjoy Simchas Yontif. So there's an Indian to have special clothing for Yontif, new clothing for Yontif, to say, well, I'll be a parish because it's pleasurable to have new clothes, so we're not going to have new clothes. That's not right, because when it comes to Yontif, you're supposed to. And the same thing with the foods we eat. So we're supposed to be parish, and we shouldn't indulge. But when it comes to Shabbos and Yontif, you should have special food. So unless it's a mitzvah, then we could talk about precious from Hanah. Precious, staying away from things that give us pleasure, that aren't necessities, they're things that we could do with that, but we enjoy. So precious might be a madrega, but not when it's a mitzvah to enjoy. There are times when it's a mitzvah to enjoy. And then that is not the time to be parish. So a person has to know the boundaries. A person has to know when is it proper to be parish and when it's not proper to be a parish. For ha precious badinim. Then the second category is when it comes to halacha. Hulahach mir behem tamid. So essentially it means to take the strict opinion. To concern ourselves with the view of an individual opinion when there's disagreement. And tamo nira, if his logic is sensible, even though we do not pass in that way, tonight with one exception, with one condition, when you follow a stringency of a das yachid who we don't pass in like, you can't follow it if a leniency will emerge. And precious would dictate to be strict in cases of doubt, even though it is possible to be lenient. In the statement of Yecheskel that the Gemara describes, the Navi Yecheskel says, my nefesh did not get polluted or defiled. And the Gemara explains, what does that mean? It means, shlochalti mi behema shahara ba chacham. I would not eat from an animal that a rav had to paskin that it was okay. If it was a shayla that had to be paskined, then I'm not eating from it. Shlochalti mi besar koiskos. I'm not going to eat the meat of an animal that was going to die soon. You know, the animal is alive and it's not a trefa. It's close to being a trefa. There's no question these things are permitted. But Yecheskel was strict on himself. Now we mentioned before, the fact that it's permitted for all of Klai Yisrael isn't going to teach us anything for us. The Purushim, when it comes to a parish, they stay away from anything which is ugly or similar to that or similar to similar. So even though it is halachically permitted, then for the average person it's fine, but for the parish he'll be strict. I am in this matter like vinegar, the son of wine, in comparison to my father. Because my father, when he ate meat today, would not eat cheese until this time tomorrow. He would wait 24 hours between milk, meat, and dairy. Whereas I am like vinegar, because I will not, if I eat meat this meal, I'll wait until the next meal to have dairy, but I don't wait 24 hours. And this idea of waiting from one meal to the next is where we get the 6 hours to wait between meat and milk. There's no question the halacha is not like his father. There's no requirement to wait 24 hours between meat and milk. Because if it was the halacha, certainly ma'uk for the son wouldn't have done different. So his father was strict and it was a precious. So he called himself, Ma'ufa said himself, I am chola bar chamo, like vinegar, the son of wine. I don't live up to my father. He was not a parish like his father was. He was also a parish, but not to the degree that his father was a parish. So the main discussion we talked about until now was the idea of precious from Hana. Here the Ramchal introduces the concept of precious when it comes to halacha, where you have a majority opinion and the standard halacha and the accepted practice is one way to allow something. But there are opinions that are strict, who we don't follow, and the parish may follow that strict viewpoint. That's not the halacha. It's a precious to follow the more strict viewpoint. And you find this concept, he says, when it comes to Yecheskel, because the Novi Yecheskel talked about certain things he wouldn't eat, even though it was fine. So he said, I wouldn't eat basar shahar b'chacham. I wouldn't eat meat that the chacham had to paskin that it was kosher. Even though the chacham paskin was kosher, he wouldn't eat it once it was a shayla. And then you have the example we gave of waiting between meat and milk. So it's an interesting thing. The halacha says that during aseres yemei tshuva, even one who is not careful to avoid paspalter during the year should refrain from eating paspalter during aseres yemei tshuva. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Paspalter is permitted. Paspalter is bread made by a non-Jewish baker, and it is mutter all year long. But it's a leniency. Pas Yisrael is a higher level where a Jew is involved in the baking process. It is not required. There are some people who are parush. They are careful all year long to only eat Pas Yisrael. But most people are not like that. Says the Shulchan Aruch, someone who's not careful all year long, during a Seder Yemei Tshuva should be careful. Which means to say that there's an element of precious that even people who are not on that madrega to be parish all year long, when it comes to Seder Yemei Tshuva, you can be parish for those 10 days. From Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, to exercise this midas ha-precious when it comes to not eating pas palter during a Seder Yemei Tshuva. And that, of course, would include any baked goods, whether it's breads or cakes or cookies and the like. When it comes to Seder Yemei Tshuva, to only eat those things that are Pas Yisrael. I will point out, when it comes to breakfast cereals, the OU maintains that the standard cereals we're familiar with, Life and Cheerios, are not a paspalter problem, and I know the Star K feels that way as well. I know others disagree, but there are those who say that's not a problem. The OU and Star K say it's not a problem. Now, the Rav Chal quotes another example from the Gemara that Yecheskel Nav wanted to eat Basar Shehor B'Chacham. So I've seen it brought Lahalacha the same thing. During Aseres Yemei Tshuva, one should not eat Basar Shehor B'Chacham. That means the meat a person eats during Aseres Yemei Tshuva should be without a Shaila. Without a Shaila. During the rest of the year, we'll eat meat that has a Shaila. As long as the Shaila comes out, then it's okay. If there's a Shaila and the Rav said it's okay, that's fine. But during a Seder Yemei Tshuva, there's an idea of being parish, and I'm not going to eat meat that has a shayla. If there's no shayla, I'll eat it. Once there's a shayla, I'm not going to eat during a Seder Yemei Tshuva. It's a meat of precious when it comes to the meat we eat. It happens to be that glatt kosher meat is meat where there's no shiloh. The cause of glatt is that there is no shiloh. If it's not glatt kosher, it might still be 100% kosher. There's a shiloh. They asked, checked it out, and they passed, and it's okay. That's really the essence of not glatt meat. In Europe, there was meat that was not glatt kosher. It was kosher. There's a shiloh. They passed, it's okay. It's kosher meat, but it's not glatt. Glatt is without any shah. Now again, literally the word glatt doesn't have to do with shah. Glatt means smooth. If there was a question on the lungs, because the lung wasn't smooth, there was something there, so you had to paskin. Sometimes it was a treifa, sometimes it wasn't. If it's not a treifa, it's perfectly fine. But if it's glatt, that means the lung is smooth, there is no shiloh. There's nothing to ask. There's no shiloh to ask. So in Europe, there are people who would eat meat that wasn't glatt kosher. I think everyone did, basically. Unless someone was a parish, he wouldn't, but everyone else would eat it. When it came to Sesame Tshuva, well, there was an Indian to only eat glatt kosher. Today, we don't have this because the meat that we buy in our stores is glatt kosher. At least officially it is anyway. It's glatt kosher. And we would never know if there's a shiloh. That's the truth. We never know, was there a shiloh that was asked on it in the storehouse? Because by the time it comes to us, it's just stamped, it's fine, and we eat it, which is fine. You're allowed to eat it, and it's perfectly fine. But that's this concept, that they would be strict to only eat the glatt kosher during Sesame Tshuva, even though the rest of the year, they would not. The final example that the Ramchal gives is how long you wait between meat and milk. And Ma'ukba said, I don't come to my father, because my father would wait 24 hours between eating meat and milk, and I don't wait 24 hours. I wait between the time it takes from one meal to the next, which, as we said, is basically 6 hours. Why didn't Ma'ukba do what his father did? Again, the Ramchal says, if the halacha was you had to wait 24 hours, of course you would wait 24 hours, but it's not the halacha, so he didn't. Why not? Why would you have to go around life thinking, I'm less than my father, is wine, I'm just vinegar, because my father would wait 24 hours, be in milk, and I don't wait that long. But he couldn't wait that long. He had a problem, he couldn't wait. If he wanted to wait, he couldn't wait. Ma'ufa can wait. If we want to wait, we could wait 24 hours. He could have waited 24 hours. He has to go through life telling the world, I'm just vinegar, the son of wine, because I don't wait 24 hours like my father. If he wanted to, he could wait 24 hours. Why didn't he wait 24 hours? That was the family minig. So he should wait 24 hours like his father did. I think it's telling us an important lesson when it comes to stringencies. Stringencies isn't about imitating other people. It's not about mimicking big tzaddikim. It's about knowing who you are and doing what's appropriate for you. Ma'upa could pretend, he could do like his father and wait 24 hours, but he knows that he did not feel that you need to wait 24 hours. He had no problem eating dairy 6 hours after eating meat. So yes, he could wait another 18 hours, but for what purpose? To pretend to be someone that he's not? To pretend to be someone who couldn't bring himself to eat dairy within 24 hours of eating meat? His father couldn't bear that concept, the idea of having milchiks within 24 hours of having meat. He waited 24 hours. But someone else who doesn't have that feeling, doesn't have that sensitivity, so what, he's going to pretend to be like that? He'll pretend to have that sensitivity? So that's not a madrega. There's no Indian to pretend to be who you're not. So Ma'ukva wasn't going to do that. He could have done it, but what's the point? The point isn't to pretend to be a tzaddik. The point isn't to pretend to be a parish. The point is that I'm parish because I understand. I'm nervous. I'm anxious. I'm concerned. If you read stories about great people, they had anxiety about these things. They're nervous about these things. So they couldn't bring themselves to do it. Yechezkel Navi wouldn't eat the animal that was almost dead. It wasn't dead. It was almost dead. But it was dead. It wasn't dead. It was a kosher animal. He could have been able to eat the meat that someone passed the shayla on. Why not? He was too nervous about it. It's the shayla. That's true. The shayla was, it's okay. He couldn't do it. So again, someone could pretend to be nervous about it, but they're really not. So I think Ma'ukva is teaching us that we have to accept who we are. I'm chala b'chama. I am vinegar, the son of wine. I could pretend to be wine, the son of wine, but I'm not. I know who I am, and I'm vinegar, the son of wine. So Mamela, there's no Indian for me to wait 24 hours, because for me, it's just pretending. It's not real. And even though Ramchal doesn't say it like that, but I think it comes out from that Gemara that Ma'ukv is teaching us this lesson, that when a person adopts stringencies, it can't just be, well, this great Rebbetzin does it, so I'm going to do it too. What does that mean? The great Rebbetzin does it, I'm going to do it too. Do you have the feelings like she has, the sensitivity that she has, the concerns that she has, the anxiety over the mitzvahs or the averus the way she has? When you have all that, then yeah, it makes sense to do that too. But you don't have any of that. So I'm just pretending to be like her. I know that there are a lot of people who do this. I know a lot of people in Yiddishkeit who will emulate tzaddikim in things that the tzaddikim did that they have no connection to. They're really, this is not relevant to them. That's not their place of avodah. Their avodah doesn't reach that level. And who are you pretending to be? This is not who you are. I think it's an important lesson that we try to be the best we can be and understand who we are and what is appropriate for us when it comes to these things. But just to find any stringency that great people did, and okay, I'm going to adopt that stringency, that's not a mahalach. I once heard that we were a generation of minhag collectors. We don't have minhagim from our ancestors. We just see minhagim and we chop them on. Oh, great, let's do this. And when you speak to older people, it bothers them a lot. Why are you doing this? That's a minhag. Who's minhag? Was it your grandparents' minhag? Was it your great-grand? Like, where did you get that minhag from? Oh, I saw so-and-so do it. Such a nice thing. Well, just because so-and-so did it doesn't mean... We don't collect minhagim. Minhagim are, by definition, things that were handed down generation to generation, things that we do. So we don't have to go collect minhagim. I'll give you an example. There are people I know that give a bracha to their children Friday nights. Every Friday night they give a bracha to their children. I grew up in a home where the only time you get a bracha of a parent is Erev Yom Kippur and at the wedding. Erev Yom Kippur, one time a year. That special bracha, divracha, yisimcha, all that stuff is only Erev Yom Kippur. So I understand it might be a nice minhag that some people give brachas to their kids every Friday night, but that's not my minhag. It's not my father's minhag. It wasn't my grandfather's minhag. And it's not what I pass on to my children. Yeah, it's a nice thing. It's nice to give brachas every Friday night, but it's not the family tradition. So you don't have to, let's start doing that. That sounds nice. Let's start giving brachas every Friday night. Is it a bad thing? I say it's a bad thing, but this is not my family minhag. If it's not your minhag, it's not your minhag. That's not what we do. So we don't have to feel compelled that, let's start doing other things. You know, there's a story. I wish it was a joke, but I really think it's not a joke. I think that really happened. This couple were eating out. They were married, I don't know, 8-9 months. And they asked the host by the Shabbos meal before they washed, could you bring out some honey? I said, honey? He said, yeah, some honey. What do you want honey? He said, well, because we dipped the challah in the honey. It's not Rosh Hashanah. It's like the middle of winter. Yeah, Shana Rishona. We dipped the challah in the honey the whole Shana Rishona. Sorry, man. Shana Rishona. We want the Shana Rishona to project. Let's take Rosh Hashanah projects for the year. Shana Rishona, I heard of this shmooze, I heard this talk. Shana Rishona projects for your lifetime together. So we dip challah and honey every Shabbos. Shana Rishona. So there might be such a meaning. I'm not familiar with it. But these people, if they asked their parents, they didn't do it. It wasn't the family meaning. It wasn't a tradition like that. So we create these things and we feel good about it and we think they're great. Is it harmful? I'm not going to say it's harmful, but it's just, it's not what we do. We have minhagim, we have our chumas, and these things that we do, but it has to be you. It has to be true to yourself, so to speak, of what you're doing or what you're about when you do these things. The third category, v'aprishus b'minhagim. Prishus b'minhagim. So usually that means prishus in traditions. Here doesn't mean that. Here it means in your conduct, your hanhaga, how you deal with people. Who hisboidus? Precious b'minhaga means hisboidus. For a person to be alone and meditate, v'hibadel min acheva hamedinis, to separate from people who are involved together, to go off by himself, l'fanus libol avoida, to be able to turn his heart to focus on serving Hashem, v'hisboidus ba, and to think about it correctly, properly, u'betanai shlo yite gam b'zel kozach, and make sure, condition, you can't go to an extreme. People should be engaged with other people. that a sword should be those who scheme and become undone. The Gemara explains the pasuk to mean the sword should be on the enemies of the Chachamim, who learn Torah by themselves. A person should spend time with good people, zman ma'aser, on time shemitzdachlo, that he needs, that he mudo when it's learning, or for panasa. And then after this, he could be alone a little bit, he davik be'elokov, to cling to his God, lahasik da'achi ha'yosh avoida mitis, and achieve the true avoida and the proper straight avoida. This would tell us to minimize his conversation, not to engage in idle chatter, not to be interested in things going on beyond his four amos. All these similar things that people get involved in, that it becomes nature or second habit, a habit for him, a second nature. These three divisions, even though I've given it to in very brief rules, what they're about, you'll see they include many, many different activities that people engage in. From Marti Luchon, I already explained before, Shapratim Yashali Masa. I can't give you over all the details. Kim Lashikl Hadas Lahayshiro Sam Al Yosha Klav Amito. It's basically your intellect that has to weigh and decide what is the right thing and the true thing for you to do. So this last division, this last section, is Precious in conduct. The first time of Precious from pleasures, and then it's like precious in halacha to be machmir when that's appropriate. And then he says precious in your conduct to spend some time disengaged, if you will, where you can focus on your avoida and make sure you are doing the right things in your life. And this really goes back to zahiros and zrizos. You need time just to think to make sure you're doing things okay. But there's a condition. You can't go to extremes. Because a person has to be died to wherever some abuse, and he brings the Gemara Makis that people who learn Torah by themselves would be self-destructive. So there are two points here. The first point is a person cannot live like a hermit. You can't go off in the woods and live in a shack and get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Bereshit created us that we are social and that we interact. And that people need each other. The Baruch Hashem created the world that people need each other. You'll have some people be farmers, and some people will be shepherds, and some people will be doctors, and some people will be lawyers. You know, whatever people do, everyone does different things, and together they all work together. And it was intended to be that way, that people should need each other. So you're not supposed to live isolated in a vacuum. And we have so many mitzvahs that involve interaction between people. There's a lot of mitzvahs. Now, there's also averus. If you go through the Al-Chetz on Yom Kippur, if you do it before Yom Kippur and go through the Al-Chetz, you'll see a lot of them, I think like two-thirds, have to do with Benot Machaber. Two-thirds are interaction with people. So it's a very significant part of our lives that we're involved with people, and we can do mitzvahs with people, and Chas Shalom, we might do things we shouldn't do with other people. But that's what we're supposed to do. We have to be engaged with people. We can't isolate ourselves from the world. And when it comes to learning Torah, it's terrible if people learn by themselves. So, Rashiva Zichron Vach Rav Ruderman would say that this Gemara that writes very scathing Musar to people who learn alone was talking about the time of the Gemara when people learned Torah Shebal Peh, Baal Peh. When people learned the oral Torah by heart, it was very bad to do it alone. Because basically you're reviewing by heart, by memory, all these halachas. And if you make a mistake and you're by yourself, there's no one to correct you. So what's going to happen is you're going to memorize your mistake. And that's going to become your baseline, so to speak, and you'll never know that you're making an error. And eventually you just won't know anything because you just make errors in your memory and that's it. So if you have someone you're learning with, you have a chavrusa, and you're each rattling off what you memorize, they could correct each other. That's not what I heard. This is what it was. And then they could check out and speak to someone else and make sure they get it straight. So when you learn Baal Peh, you got to get it straight. But Rav Shiva said, we have the Gemara printed. We have the Shulchan Aruch printed. We have it all written down. Teresh Baal Peh is no longer learnt Baal Peh. Teresh Baal Peh is now learnt Bichsav. And the Gemara addresses this too. How can we do such a thing? Because the Pasuk, Eis Lasos HaShev HaFeir Terasecha, that when times require it, we will have to void this halacha. And the Rambam explains it in his introduction to Yad HaChazaka, that because of Golus, because of what was going on, people were incapable of learning Teresh Baal Peh, Baal Peh anymore. It was not a possibility to learn Baal Peh. They were forgetting, they were losing. It had to be written down. It had to be recorded. It started by recording the Mishnah, and later recording the Talmud, and then later recording the Shulchan Aruch, and on it kept going. So, we have everything written down. So a person learns Gemara by himself. Is he learning by himself? He has his Gemara. He has Rashi. He has Tosfos. It's possible he might make a mistake in understanding the Gemara or the Rashi or the Tosfos, but it's not like the mistakes of the days when you learned Baal Peh, because then you made a mistake, you'll learn it wrong forever. And here, it's really in front of you, and the Shiva said you can learn by yourself. And there are many people who learn by themselves. There are many people who will learn by themselves, and they have a hard time learning with other people. At the same time, most Rosh Yeshivas will tell you it's better to learn the Chavrusa. It is better to learn the Chavrusa because you might make a mistake when you are learning by yourself, even though you have a Gemara and a Rashi and a Tosfos and so on. You may misunderstand something. You may misread it, convince yourself of a pshat which is not accurate. I saw an amazing thing. It's really, it's almost shocking, I should say. Someone showed it to me this past Shabbos. That the Netziv commented on the fact that we have hundreds, it's probably even more than hundreds, maybe thousands of books, the Svarim, devoted to explaining the Rambam. The Rambam wrote an amazing work, Yad HaChazaka, and there's a lot of time spent on it on high-level learning. On high-level learning, it's delving into what he says and exactly his language and his choice of words and the position of each halacha and how he understood it and what it means. And it's a lot of time is spent on learning Rambam on high-level study in yeshivas. So Siv said, the problem is that the Rambam wrote his Sefer by himself. He locked himself away, and he wrote over 10, 12, 14 years, whatever it is, he wrote the Rambam. And because of that, we have all kinds of questions about what he meant. Did he mean this? Did he mean that? What happened over here? Where's Halacha come from? And there's a lot of creative thinking and originality. And did the Rambam really mean that? Didn't he mean that? Then Siv says, if he had a Chavrusa going over with him, they would have pointed out, you can't say it like that, because then it might mean this, it might contradict that. And for sure, he would have made corrections, he would have changed the way he writes. Then Siv says, I can't say this, then Siv says it. Then Siv says, if had the Rambam had a Chavrusa when he was doing it, and learned with someone else, he's convinced that there wouldn't be so many Sfarim explaining the Rambam. It's because he wrote it by himself that we're all trying to figure out what he meant, because there's so many things that are difficult to understand. And the Netziv says, because he had no chavusa when he did it. Again, it's the Netziv says such a thing. I would never say such a thing. But this idea that when you have a chavusa, you can flesh it out, you can clarify something, you can better understand what's going on, is definitely something that's advantageous. There were Rosh Yeshivas who would not print their notes or shiurim unless they discussed it in the yeshiva. And they get feedback from the Talmidim. Was there a question of what they said? How to resolve it? If they didn't discuss the yeshiva, they wouldn't print it because there's no feedback. There's no way to know if they maybe made an error. And in the same article, the Nesif brings that the Marsha in Sanhedrin stopped at a certain point. There's a commentary in the back of the Gemara. He stops midway, says, I'm stopping here because the rest of this I didn't do in yeshiva. Means all his commentaries were things he discussed in yeshiva. These were questions he had, answers he gave, and if it passed the Talmidim's test, it ended up in the Sefer. But things that he did without the Talmidim to listen to and question and back and forth, he wouldn't print it. he wouldn't print it. I'm not going to print it. I didn't do it in yeshiva, so I'm not going to print this part. So even though these are people who can learn by themselves, they don't need a chavrusa to learn with, there is an advantage of being able to teach something with someone else or talk something through with someone else, have someone else look at it, and they could pick up and does this work with this and question some other places and make sure everything settles in and everything works out properly. That's an advantage you have when you have someone else that you're studying with as opposed to studying by yourself. But like I said, there are still, with all that, there are still people who feel they accomplish better or more when they learn by themselves. It comes very hard at some points to have a chavrusa that is basically balanced with you, that you can feel that you're not being tied down or slowed down. Sometimes you can be slowed down a little bit, but sometimes it gets too much and then it becomes unbearable. So there are people who eventually learn by themselves. But there are some people who have chavrusas all day long. It's like everyone has their own way of doing it. Elu ve'elu, they both are acceptable approaches. But there's no question that even with the printing of the Svarim and the Gemaras, we all have that. If you do have someone to go through with it, whether it's a Rebbe Talmud or Chavrusa, it does clarify things. It makes things more clear, and a person picks up on things that otherwise would be misunderstood. It's not like women always have this opportunity. Some women do, most don't. If a boy is going to appear as bar mitzvah pshato, or any kind of drasha, it's worthwhile to speak it over someone, to say the speech first to someone else, and that sentence doesn't make sense. Someone else listening before the presentation could point out how either the organization maybe is disorganized, it's not organized as well as it could be, or perhaps some things are wrong or things are misunderstood. Sometimes you say something, it could be misunderstood the way it's said. So you say it a little different, it won't be misunderstood. These are things that if you're going to make a presentation, you speak it over with someone first, they can listen to it, pick up on these things. So that is true with Torah, that even though a person could do things on his own, there's an advantage of someone's talking it through with someone else just to make sure that it's sound and it is not flawed. So that's an inyan as well that is kedai. So when it comes to precious, yes, there's an inyan of precious in conduct that people may want to be alone and be able to introspect and be able to meditate, but most of the time we are involved with other people, and even in learning Torah, it can be very beneficial to have someone else to talk with and discuss in Torah topics.